You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, when on Perspectives, one of the things that I like to do is I like to bring in people on my show that really have been successful, highly intelligent in what they've done, and they've pioneered a new way. You know, I find oftentimes we're looking to find somebody that we can look up to, or someone that's done something that we want to do, or someone that's doing something that we want to do. And it's really powerful because in this world of overinformation and so much saturation, we begin to wonder who's doing what, and we're interested in how they're doing it, but more so how we can maybe incorporate that into our day-to-day life. You know, in the last few months, I've met some very interesting people, and I was at a conference in Orlando for podcasting, and I met one person in particular. And he really got my attention. Very interesting person. Seems to have a lot on the ball. You know, whether it's his speaking or his conferences or his podcast or all of that combined, that really interests me. And so I was actually invited to an event that he holds twice a year. And he is on today's episode of Live Your True Life Perspective. His name is Steve Ulcer. And Steve is very famous for being America's reinvention expert. He's famous for helping people and corporations to understand what is their what. He's also very interesting because he was one of the first folks that I know that was on the internet selling anything back in 1993. And he has an ability to connect with people, but to help them find what they're looking for, or to make them successful in the fact of basically finding those unique traits and using them for the good. Steve, so glad to have you on the radio today.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on.
So it's really great. When I first met you in Orlando, I think we kind of hit it off in the fact that I was very interested in what you were doing, and you had all this stuff going on, and then you also have what is called the New Media Summit. Tell our listeners a little bit about that event that you hold twice a year.
So the New Media Summit is, it's a unique event from the standpoint of, it's the only event that I know of where 150 attendees have the opportunity to meet and learn from and pitch 40 top podcasters and literally get booked on the spot. So they come there, they learn about podcasts, and they pitch the podcasters and leave with bookings in hand.
So it's very cool. You have this thing called the Icons of Influence. So you bring in folks that have a podcast, and they're the ones that actually listen to the pitch. And what is the style that you use when you turn the chairs around and all that? What's that called?
It's modeled after The Voice, right? So it's an NBC show about, you know, singing competition. But it's modeled after that where, well, we have 40 podcasters that are there listening to these 150-odd pitches. But the way that we do it is we put eight of them at a time, the eight of the icons at a time on stage in chairs that swivel. So their backs are actually to the person pitching, and the person pitching is actually pitching the entire audience. And then if the icon of influence likes their pitch, then they turn around, and that means they'd like to book them on their show.
That's pretty cool. So where did you come up with the idea for that whole concept?
You know, it's interesting. I had attended a couple of events that focused on the traditional media space. So, like, you would go and you'd be able to pitch producers for, like, television shows, right? And you've seen it in the cinema space as well, where people have scripts and they get to pitch producers on their scripts and be able to get, you know, hopefully someone to say, yeah, we'd love to produce that film for you. So I had seen this in other spaces, but I had not seen it yet in this podcast space. And as someone who's been podcasting since 2009, it just occurred to me that this would be a lot of fun. So we tried it for the first time in September of 2017. And it's really kind of taken on a life of its own ever since.
That's really awesome. You know, it's incredible when somebody comes up with an idea, and ideas are great, but it's incredible when somebody can actually execute. How many ideas do you come up with in a day, and how many do you actually execute on?
Yeah, right. Far too many. My tech person and also a private client and a mutual friend of ours, Kim Sutton, she has something that she calls chronic idea disorder. And so I think that that is I think that's probably what I suffer from, just like you and others who have entrepreneurial minds. And I mean, there's probably not a day that goes by that I don't come up with the next $1 billion idea that I probably won't do anything with.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar in my life. I get it. What would you give as far as advice to the listeners of Live Your True Life when it comes to an idea that's reoccurring? Because I'm assuming that the New Media Summit idea and the concept was something that was reoccurring over and over again. What are some, you know, advice that you would give to somebody that, hey, about, you know, getting started with something like that and taking on something of that magnitude?
Mm-hmm. It complemented what I had already done. So I had opened up my own nightclub when I was 19. I DJed for a number of years. So, I mean, I've always been an entertainer, so to speak, and played drums for about 10 years. And so I've always been comfortable on the stage, and I had been doing workshops for a number of years, workshops called the Reinvention Workshop, where I would help people discover, share, and monetize what it is that they're truly compelled to do, how they're naturally wired to excel. And then I did an event called Internet Profits Live, PROPHETS. Did that for a number of years. We had people like Brendan Burchard and Vishen Lakhani and Jay Conrad Levinson and many, many others take that stage. And so, you know, doing events is definitely something that I've always been comfortable with. So it wasn't that big of a stretch to just do an event that was a little bit different here. So what I would say is, you know, if it's a complete 180 from what it is that you've been doing in the past, then you probably want to test it and you want to get some feedback and you want to make sure that there's a market, right, for what it is that you're looking to do. But in my case, because I had done events before and I had a pretty solid feel for the event model and seeing what's going on in the podcasting realm, I felt really, really comfortable taking that risk.
So you have a show called Reinvention Radio. You have a podcast, Reinvention Radio. Is there a certain age that we can reinvent ourselves, or do you think that that's timeless, or what's your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's timeless. I mean, look, you can reinvent your life, obviously, at any point, and I do believe that life starts over right now, right? And it starts over again right now, so it just continually starts over, and you can always reinvent yourself and reinvent your life on a dime. But I think for most adults, they kind of get out, they kind of have to get out into the quote unquote real world for, I would say, a minimum of 10 to 15 years before they really have a sense of like either what I'm doing is awesome and I love it and I want to continue doing it, or I need to do something completely different, right? So if it's from a career perspective, I think you got to get 10, 15 years under your belt in the work world to really say, okay, let me now reevaluate from a life perspective. You know, as I said, you can reinvent your life today in this moment. And sometimes that happens when someone you love dies, or you get divorced, or maybe you go through some sort of life-changing experience. But you know, it's certainly something that anyone can do at any time.
So let me ask you about Reinvention Radio. When you first started it, when did you first do the first podcast, by the way?
So the first episode of Reinvention Radio that we repurposed then as a podcast, because I always do my shows live and then we repurpose mm-hmm. them as a podcast. And I've got Reinvention Radio, and then more recently we released a new show called Beyond Eight Figures, where we sit down with entrepreneurs who have either exited for more than $10 million or currently run businesses that generate more than $10 million annually. But the first show that I did for Reinvention Radio was in 2009 and went off and on there for a while and really on a continuous basis now since 2015.
Well, and what was your first interview, or who was your first interview with?
The very first interview, I don't remember, but in that first series, we had some really interesting people on, people like Larry Winget, people like Jane Velez Mitchell, used to be a correspondent on CNN, and many, many, many other people. And since that time, boy, I mean, we've had some amazing people on the show. People like Lewis Howes and Michael Gerber and Michael Hyatt and J.J. Virgin, and I mean, I think you name it, we've had them on the show, and all of our shows have a theme, right? So every show is built around a particular theme, like reinventing fear or reinventing sex or reinventing marketing or reinventing the homeless. I mean, that sort of thing. So we've really covered a lot of ground on that show as well.
That's powerful. Yeah, I remember back at my first show, it was pretty funny. It was actually pretty cool, but I actually had a friend of mine on from Fox News, and we thought that Cumulus at the time had an agreement with Fox. We didn't realize that their media agreement had ended with Fox. It was now with ABC. That was always very interesting and eye-awakening, you know, 10 minutes before the show. and him wondering if his producer's going to let him be on the show, but it all worked out. But it was fun. I can remember it like it was yesterday, and it was only like almost 7 years ago. You know, it was interesting when I first met you and then went to the first event that I went to of yours. What I thought was interesting was the camaraderie of the folks there. And I know that you've mentioned a couple of times, you said, hey, I'm not like this overly spiritual person, but I tend to bring this together somehow. Can you explain how you feel that kind of takes place at your events?
I think what you're referring to, I mean, is twofold. Number one, the camaraderie and the connectivity that happens between the attendees and also with the icons who are there. So what I think one of the main differentiators between our event and many others and why people come out of there having developed real relationships with lots of different types of folks in attendance is, number one, I set the stage for, I guess, for lack of a better term, just really having an authentic, vulnerable environment, right, where I share my stories of trials and tribulations and am open and completely honest about what we're doing in our business and the struggles that we have and so on. So I think it just provides really that platform, if you will, for folks to be more of who they really are as opposed to who they think others want them to be. So that definitely creates a strong bond. The other piece of that puzzle is that everyone is together for the entire 3 days. And that means we eat together, so lunch is served for everyone. We dance together. We always have an LED dance floor. We learn together. We do small group discussions. We do panel discussions. And, of course, we do the pitches. And when you hand 150 people the microphone and let them take center stage to share their story, it really creates a sense of camaraderie and a bond that's pretty unlike any other event for sure that I've ever been to.
I find it very powerful. Let me ask you, you know, when people are thinking about the traits and the gifts that they've been given, you know, some people say it's a God thing, some people think it's just, you know, the way we came in this world, however you want to look at it. What are some of the talents that you think that you've been given that you've been really able to excel with and push forward in your life?
Well, in my book, What Is Your What?, we go over the What Is Your What? Framework, which I've now worked with tens of thousands of people on over the years. And what is so interesting about the What Is Your What framework is that it really all does begin with your core gift and understanding how you're naturally wired to excel. And so my core gift is communicating. And there are other pieces of the What Is Your What framework that then tie into that, the second being the primary vehicle that you will use to share that gift, and then the third piece being the people that you're most compelled to serve. But really, because of what I've been able to glean over the years insofar as my work around writing and speaking and DJing and so on, I've just always been naturally wired to excel as a communicator. And I think that that's in large measure why I've found success with writing and with public speaking and with doing live events, because it complements that core gift of communicating so well. Does that answer your question?
I think so. So, you know, it's interesting how we look at life nowadays, whether it's political, whether in the workplace or even in your family life, either with your spouse, your loved ones, your parents. I find that communication is a very interesting thing. I find that communication is something that is often, well, lost in the shuffle. It seems that a lot of us have an inability to communicate properly. And so being able to communicate like you do is awesome. But how do you, since you're so good at communicating with large groups of people, let me ask you, do you ever have communication breakdowns in your own family?
Oh, for sure. Are you kidding? I'm famous in my own events, but at home, I mean, I'm, I'm the pauper on the hierarchy there. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt that I'm not gonna sit here and say by any stretch that I've got all my stuff together. You know, I mean, it ebbs and it flows, and sometimes I feel like I'm in the zone and able to communicate quite clearly. And other times I feel like I'm just mumbling Joe and nobody understands what I'm saying. So yeah, reality is life at home with the wife and kids will definitely keep you humble. And so far as at least just keeping you honest that you don't really have all your stuff together yet. It's still a work in progress.
Yeah, I find it interesting communication overall, you know, trying to work and communicate and be able to communicate with people through their communication style. You know, understanding the other person and, you know, everybody talking about Venus and Mars and this and that. But at the same point in time, it's just breaking it down clearly. And sometimes it can be really tough with the people that are closest to you. And I find that very interesting, too, because I've interviewed other leaders on my show and they find the same thing, is that it's even tougher when you're dealing with people in your own home to be able to communicate, because one, you kind of feel like they should already know, and two, you know, there's a little bit of laziness involved as well sometimes, but all in all, it can be very interesting and, like you said, humbling.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And yeah, the God's honest truth is that with my core gift of being communicating, you know, the more that I communicate, the more I hone my gift, right? So even when I have setbacks, I can't just shut down and stop. As a matter of fact, I got to dig in and figure out what went wrong so that I can continually refine and evolve as a communicator.
That's so true. That's so true. Let me ask you, because a lot of people always wonder when you're in this type of field and you're doing this type of work, is the rest of your family involved in that type of work as well? Or are you kind of the lone wolf in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, my mom actually does coaching and consulting. So she works on my team, actually coaching my private clients. So she's definitely a communicator. My wife is a communicator in her own right, but her focus is actually, she's a funeral director and embalmer. So she's more of a creator, really, because a lot of the work that she does is so creative in nature. But yeah, of course, communication is a piece of that. But in this immediate household, that's certainly my gift. I'm not sure that it's anyone else's in our home.
Interesting. Yeah, what I've found, it seems that when people are very successful, oftentimes the spouses have very different jobs. You know, I found that a lot of people have tried to do the same type of thing or support one another, and I found that that's very difficult for some people, you know, just because of the fact that a lot of people need their own outlet and need their own time away. And so the impact of that is quite interesting. I've seen some couples that are able to work together, and it seems to work, but I don't know if that's for everybody for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm trying right now to help my wife find a place so she can open up her own funeral home. But it's not my area of expertise, but it's also not something that I have a definitive interest in doing, just because, yeah, I'm not cut out for that work, at least not back of house anyway. Front of house working with the family is probably back of house. Not really my thing.
Yeah, I don't really see you doing that.
Mm-mm.
I don't really see that. It's interesting, mm-hmm. though. I mean, I think it takes a special person to be able to do that, though, as well.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, like I said early on here, I mean, you got to figure out what puts fire in your soul and really understand how you're naturally wired to excel. And I do think that, just going back to the what is your what vernacular, I do really believe that your what has chosen you, and it's not that which you have chosen.
So for the listener right now that's thinking, what is my what information or guidance or support would you give to them to find their what?
Well, step one is exactly what we're doing right now, which is having a conversation about it, right? I mean, you have to kind of turn the light switch on, so to speak. that you want to know what it is. Yeah, and look, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but you know, I would say that the largest majority of the population will go through life without really ever honing in on how they're naturally wired to excel, largely because, you know, these aren't things that we teach in school, and these certainly aren't things that we talk about around the dinner table. And so that's the question, right, is how do we figure out exactly how we're naturally wired to excel? And once you are committed to answering that question, let's just say, you know, if you think about it from a light switch analogy and you turn that light switch on that you want to find the answer, then that's really step one, right? And that's where it all begins. Once you have turned on the light switch, it's really hard to turn it off. So once you've committed to trying to figure out what your what is, then it's a matter of finding the right modality to help you understand what that is. And you know, my book, What Is Your What, is certainly one of those options. But you know, you may find that Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders or What Color Is Your Parachute or something of that nature can help you get to those answers. And so once you get to the answers that you need, then of course the next step, step three, is you've got to put that into action. And you've got to go out and volunteer or apprentice or do something to begin bringing that side of who you are to fruition. I don't think you should do it full time yet. You certainly don't want to quit your day job and just jump into it. Let someone else fund your transition.
That's cool. That's smart. You know, I find it very interesting in our society, though, you know, beginning when we're young, you know, back in preschool, elementary school, you know, being different is considered scary. Being different is odd. And it's funny, the change from different is scary to unique is cool is what I find very interesting. And I think it speaks toward, you know, what is your what in this situation, because I think that in order to really find that, you kind of got to look for those unique characteristics of yourself that you may or may not have ever really liked about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is true that, you know, that which makes us different, if we really honor that, is that which can make us very wealthy, right? And wealthy, of course, is a relative term. I mean, it could be spiritual wealth, it could be emotional wealth, it could be financial wealth. But, you know, that which makes us different ultimately can make us very, very, very wealthy.
Yeah, I find it interesting. And I find, like, you know, as a kid and myself throughout the years and looking back at school, I remember, you know, the things that I wanted in life. And you know, those are things that I didn't get. And I'm glad I didn't get those. But it's interesting how I wanted those things. And the only reason I wanted some of those things is to fit in. And I find that adults nowadays, too, a large portion of even some of the folks listening to the show are really trying to find their unique voice and trying to figure out what that is and trying to let go of the stereotypes and the things that they've been told about themselves that are not necessarily true, far from the truth, that have actually held them back in their life today.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, there's people out there who will talk about, you know, how your mess is your message, right? And how everything that you've had to endure has, you know, made you into the person that you are today, right? And look, I totally get that, and I can see the power in those teachings. But when all is said and done, I will tell you that people will remember you much more for what you did than what you said, right? So you just got to figure out how to get started and get started somewhere. And even if your path changes course a million times over over your lifetime, I mean, that's just par for the course. I mean, that is what's going to happen. But the most important thing is just jumping into something that you feel like, hey, you know, this is something that I would enjoy doing.
I thought it was interesting something that you said back, you know, about jumping in. And, you know, I think that a lot of times people get overwhelmed. You know, they get overwhelmed before they can even jump in. It's, they see an idea, or they come up with an idea, or they see a pathway that they think is going to bring them happiness or joy, which it might. But then in the same rationale or the same thought, that fear factor comes in, the fear shows up, You know, and then all of a sudden that feeling overwhelmed about where to begin, at what point do I start, how do I start doing this, where do I begin? What are some of the things that you believe are crucial when it comes to just putting that first foot in the water? I mean, you know, just putting your first foot on the first step in the pool. What is some of the mindset that you've worked with to make that a reality?
I think it's just understanding what the worst case scenario is and working through that, right? Because things that happen to us in life never go quite as good as we hope that they'll go, or as poorly as we fear that they might, right? It's always going to be someplace, it's always going to land someplace in between. So what I would suggest is, let's identify what the absolute worst case scenario is for you and weigh whether or not that has real impact on your life in a long-term manner. I mean, look, if you're looking at, like, I've done real estate development for the better part of 15 years, and there have been times where I've put all of my finances at risk. Like, I've pledged my home, right? I pledged my home as collateral. I've pledged my savings accounts, right, as collateral. And in a worst case, I could lose that all, right? I mean, so that's pretty real. And maybe for you, if you're at an age where you don't want to start over or don't feel like you could start over, then the answer is, well, heck, I'm not going to do that. But if the worst case scenario is looking bad, or somebody making fun of you, or you know, just not having things feel great, right, in terms of what it is that you did, is that going to prevent you from taking the risk, right? And so I think that's part of the process, is really just understanding what the downside truly looks like. And does the downside outweigh the upside? And sometimes the answer is going to be yes, but oftentimes the answer is no.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I think that goes directly with the concept of regret. I mean, that's something that, I just really don't want a lot of that on my plate. I don't want any of that on my plate when I take off from this planet. You know, I don't want to sit back and look at all this like pile of regret. And I feel a lot of times, like you said, is it the fear of looking bad? Is it the fear of failure? Is it the fear of not doing what you think and other people making fun? Have you ever struggled with any regret? Or if not, you know, how have you avoided it?
Man, too much to list. So, reality is, I haven't avoided a lot of the things that I look back and I'm regretful on. I mean, one of the things that I'm regretful about is, getting out of the markets when my instincts told me that there was an opportunity to get out and I should have gotten out. I mean, with the business that we launched online in 1993, that was an internet business, and I knew by 99, 2000 that the numbers, the hype, if you will, wasn't sustainable. But I stayed in that business and eventually lost everything, including the very valuable domain that I had acquired over those years. So I ended up getting that domain back, interestingly enough, but that's a story for another day. I mean, same thing in real estate, being too greedy. I had an opportunity to make some really good money on a couple of projects, and I had an opportunity to make decent money on a couple of other projects, but I got too greedy. I felt like the markets will continue to soar, but all of the fundamentals, all of the, you know, indexes, the numbers, et cetera, the metrics said otherwise, but I thought I knew better. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely have regrets insofar as some business decisions, no doubt. On the personal level, you know, I mean, there are always things that you look back on and you're like, yeah, I'm not too proud of that. But you learn from that and hopefully you move forward. So, yeah, lots of regrets all over the place for sure.
And I feel that's very normal. I think that a lot of times when people are fearful of what's going to happen, we get into the fear of doing things. We get into the non-doing of anything. We get stuck. And in that stuck point, I think that in itself is a lot of regret. And I think that's something that I don't see you suffering from, is not doing. You know, I see you. Yes, you might have made some decisions that might have been one way or another, but I feel like you're always doing. And I think a lot of people are suffering from the fact of, oh, I'm so scared to do one thing that I'm just going to get stuck here and paralyzed in movement that I'm going to regret not doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, it's a fine line as you get older between learning from your mistakes and not doing anything. Right. And I think that there are plenty of people, me included, who just kind of coast at a certain point. I mean, for lack of a better way of framing this, I mean, I do think that in large regard, I've kind of called it, just kind of dialed it in and just been coasting for the last dozen or so years. And that doesn't always work to your benefit either. Right. I mean, there's a certain level, a certain frequency that I think we need to be playing at. And some of that involves risk. Some of that involves taking chances. Some of that involves really moving outside of your comfort zone. And I will say that the majority of the things that I have been doing for the last dozen or so years are completely within my comfort zone.
Okay. How do you feel like you can get out of that comfort zone, you know, for some folks that are out there? I've had some clients, you know, that I've worked with, and the last thing that we were really worried about was some of the coasting stuff, but now they've kind of gone over that hump. You know, we've done a lot of major emotional, mental changes. But what is some advice you have? I know how I kind of work with clients, but how do you work with a client who has been coasting for a while, beginning to feel a little, feeling as though life is maybe passing them by? What are some of the areas of life that you think they should delve into first? Because one of the things that I hear people, that the first thing that they talk about is that they've lived in the same house for 15 years. I always think that's very interesting. It's like the way we define coasting is like, you know, we haven't moved, or it's the same stuff, it's the same place. You know, what are some things that you would recommend somebody that feels like they're kind of in a rut?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a matter of exposing yourself to different types of people, to exposing yourself to different types of events, to exposing yourself to different types of activities, to expose yourself to different ways of life in terms of how people live, right? I mean, just we get often so comfortable with who we are and what we do and our surroundings and the people that we surround ourselves with, that we forget that there's so many other ways to be, that even just that experiment in and of itself of immersing yourself in different cultures or surrounding yourself with different types of people can really help you break out of whatever that state of complacency is that you've been experiencing for as long as you've been experiencing it. But you know, look, comfort is sometimes viewed in a negative light. And another side of the coin here is just embrace the comfort, you know, and just thank whoever it is that you want to thank for being able to live in a way that is comfortable. And I think part of what we have to get over is the stigma of comfort being bad. And I don't see comfort as being bad. As a matter of fact, why wouldn't you want to live in a comfortable manner? And I think we do have to break some of that stigma.
Yeah, that is very powerful. It's interesting. I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld.
The show. I have, for sure. Yeah.
And remember the part, there was a couple episodes, there's one particular with George Costanza where his character, he was working at the office, and he found out that if you look perturbed and angry all the time, that people think you're working more. I always thought that was kind of interesting, you know, because it's true. It's true. I remember several occasions people have asked me how work is going, and the first thing I might be working, you know, 17-hour days, but the first thing I say is, oh, it's going great. And the first response they have is, oh, wow, so you haven't been having to work very hard, huh? So, you know, what's going on? And you're thinking, no, I was up at the office for 17 hours. But it's so funny how the opposite is true, too. When somebody sees you and you're kind of like, you've been beaten down at work and you're like, oh, yeah, I've been working, you know, God. You know, they're like, oh, man, you must be burning the midnight oil, you know. And all of a sudden there's that feeling like they're really happy to hear that. And it is interesting. That's kind of the same as the thought process of, you know, the upset of being comfortable. I mean, it's not a bad thing, you know, but it's like how society has deemed the fact that, you know, if you're actually upbeat and in a good mood, well, you must not be busy enough. You must not be working as hard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And again, it's just all about, well, I mean, you know, to your terms here, it's just all about perspective. And I think that we put so much pressure on ourselves to live by the whims and the agendas and definitions of others that, you know, maybe we just need to take a step back and say how other people define success is not how I'm going to define it, right? And this is what works for me, and it may not work for you.
And I think that's one of the biggest challenges we as individuals, as humans have, is to stop comparing ourselves to other people and then defining that comparison and then judging by that comparison. I see it happen day in and day out in my personal life with clients, you know, therapy clients, even coaching clients. You see that. And it's interesting. I feel like, you know, social media is a platform that really provides a lot of space for the mind to compare. I found that, you know, houses, cars, jewelry, events all provide time for the mind to compare. And I find that to be, I think, one of the biggest things that holds us back from not only figuring out who we are, but really powering up in that position to be all we can be. And I, you know, using the army thing, be all you can be and actually excel to who you are. I feel like as that comparison continues and as we continue to fall into that framework, we get farther and farther away from who we truly are.
Yeah. And that's really, to me, what reinvention is all about. Is it's not necessarily a matter of changing anything about who you are so much as it's just kind of shedding the shackles and the outfits and the personalities that we've taken on over the years to appease the whims and agendas of others, and just getting back to the core, really to the essence of who we truly are.
Yeah, I like that. And I think also a lot of times too, it's being able to define what makes us happy, what we connect with, eliminating those stigmas, and then taking it to that next level. And, you know, it's always going to pop in and out of there, no matter what you're doing in life. You know, it's hard to end a full-on cycle. That's why we talk about ending the cycle. And the ending of the cycle is not just about abuse. It's about ending cycles that no longer provide for us. Ending cycles that never provided anything but pain and misery, or the objective was to get off of objective based on the pain and misery. And I think those are the types of cycles that we have to identify in our life. And I think that might be part of your idea of reinvention, is to realize what no longer suits you, or better yet, what never suited you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of it too. And that's why I'm saying, you know, you asked the question earlier about reinvention and when is it, you know, possible, or when is it time to do that? Then reality is, I think you just have to go far enough down the path for folks to have enough life experiences and to know that, hey, it's time that I've got to change course.
Yeah, and I think also we have that finite amount of time, you know. We have that finite amount of time.
Yeah, and it's amazing what you can do in a short period of time. I mean, you look at a guy like Paul Allen, who recently passed, the co-founder of Microsoft, right? I mean, you know, and look at what he was able to do in his lifetime, right? I mean, you look at companies like Uber and Google and Amazon, right? I mean, Amazon, they launched online with a fully functional e-commerce site the same year that we launched online with a fully functional e-commerce site. And you look at what they've been able to do in those years. And reality is, if you get onto the right path, you can do some pretty amazing things in a fairly short period of time.
It's powerful. Let me ask you, I know you have a lot of stuff going on, but what do you see in the future? What do you see in Steve's future?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, right now, I primarily work 3 days a week. So today is one of my work days, right? I mean, I work Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So we're recording this. We're doing this interview here on a Wednesday, right? So that is one of the things that I have been able to do well, is be very productive. I mean, at this point, I've got $4 million-plus businesses, and I'm actively involved in some elements of it, and not actively involved in other elements of the businesses. So, reality is, for the future, I'm not sure that I want to work significantly harder than I work now, but certainly getting involved with things that continue to put fire in my soul and things that continue to put my brain, you know, my brain to work are all parts of the process. And so, you know, I'll continue to write. I'll continue to do events like the New Media Summit. I'll continue to do real estate development projects and, you know, and help the wife with her business and continue to do the shows, Reinvention Radio and Beyond Eight Figures.
Well, that's awesome, Steve, and I look forward to hearing more from you. I know that you are a powerhouse, and I always look forward to what you're working on, and I'm always interested. I do listen to your show, Reinvention Radio, and I do like it a lot. You know, one last question before I let you go. I know that we're almost over time here. You know, for the folks that are listening, you know, I think that the Amazon is a great example and Google is a great example. But, you know, for the folks that are like, wow, you know, they got lucky, or wow, that's, you know, one in a million. You know, what is some what's a couple of takeaways that folks can think about and say, you know, hey, I might not come up with the next Google, but I am coming up with something that can help people. How do you get them to really employ that belief system to power through in the times of disbelief?
Well, it really just all boils down to having clarity around the people that you're most compelled to serve. And once you understand the people that you're most compelled to serve, you'll do whatever you can to serve them, and really recognizing that you are the solution to someone else's problem, and they're literally waiting and praying for you to show up in their lives. I mean, that's going to keep you going when times really get tough. And, you know, I reach a lot of people, but I don't reach as many people as I hope to in my lifetime. But every time I get a note from someone or an email from someone saying that my work has affected them in a positive way, I know that I'm on the right track. So it, really, at the end of the day, if you want to create a six-figure business, you only need 1,000 people to pay $100, right? So figure out what you can do for even the smallest subset of the population and create something that serves them, and just stay the course.
Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. Well, thank you so much for coming on Live Your True Life Perspectives. I really appreciate your input, and I'd love to have you on again if you're willing to.
Sounds good. Yeah, keep me posted. Always happy to chat. Appreciate the work you're doing too.
Great conversation with Steve today here on Live Your True Life Perspectives. You know, I always find it very powerful, you know, to have these conversations, because we can understand where someone else is coming from. We can understand someone else's thought process, and better yet, their perspective. It's all about perspectives, isn't it? But I think that's powerful. And I think nowadays, in a world where communication is so valuable, but yet communication seems so tough to have, I think it's more important than ever to have this show and to be able to connect with other people. So hopefully this show has helped you in some way. One of the things that I do want to say for the record is that, you know, I've found that it can be overwhelming when you come up with ideas and you have concepts and you have thoughts and you are a deep thinking person and you're also a deep feeling person and you're a highly emotional person in a good way. I think these things are very good and can be honed correctly. However, I find that oftentimes when we are really resonating at this higher frequency, we have a tendency of being overwhelmed quickly. We have a tendency of feeling like maybe we're lesser than, or we're going to be unable to tackle something. And we see other people as being so much more successful than we are, and the list goes on. And for anybody out there that's listening right now that has, you know, basically proverbially raised your hand in your head, or actually physically raised your hand to what I'm saying, and you know who you are, it's like, let's take a step back real quick and just think. Why are other people better? I think that's a concept that we have about self-esteem and self-worth, and I think it's something that we've learned over time. I feel also we haven't honed into what we're really good at. What are you truly good at? What are some of the gifts that you've been given by God? Have you thought about that? And really, think about it. Like, one of the things that I realized a long time ago, and I was late to the party as well, was the fact that I was given this voice that's powerful, right? Sure, do I still get made fun of? Yeah, I get made fun of all the time on YouTube, guys. Come on now. But you know what? Most of the time, I'm not getting made fun of, and it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter anymore. It used to matter. It doesn't matter anymore. And I've realized that these qualities and traits and gifts are always highly unique and highly different, stand out in a crowd. And those are the things that define you. Those are the things that if you help and figure out and cultivate and craft and work on and magnify will actually change your life for the better. Seriously. Powerful stuff. But you got to get real with you. You got to get real with you and you got to think about it. And you got to focus on those things. You got to engage in that. You got to process it. You got to get real with it. But best yet, you got to accept you. Until you actually accept yourself for those unique qualities and things that you have, you're never going to embrace it fully. You're never going to love on it fully. You're never going to build it out fully to where it needs to be. It needs to be cultivated and cared for. Just like a puppy or a bunny or whatever. You got to care for it. You got to raise it right. You got to believe in it. You got to love it. You got to care about it. You can't hate on it. You got to embrace it. And when you do that, you begin to embrace yourself. So you're taking a quality of yourself, and then you begin to embrace your entire self. And this becomes very powerful because self-respect and self-love is very powerful. We got to respect ourselves, guys. We got to respect ourselves. And so, you know, it's time. It's time. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can always, make changes. You can always, as, you know, Steve says, reinvent. You can always really learn about yourself, and you can always really take it to heart, and you can inspire other people. I often realize that a lot of people who are going through these changes don't realize the inspiration that they are to others in their life. To realize, to understand that you are inspiring somebody you might not even realize you're inspiring. You're impacting somebody's life that you might not even know that you are, and that's even more valuable. And I know we want to see it. It's like, you know, when somebody does something bad to you and you go, I want to see karma wreck, ravish this person, you know, but it's like, you're not going to see it. You're not going to see it. It's not going to happen, but something's going to happen probably. But it's the same thing as really focusing on you and not worrying who's watching, who's looking. Just do what you got to do. Really care about yourself. And one of the first things that I would like you to do in an experiment is being aware of the negative thoughts in your head, being aware of them, because until we get stuck over what's happening in our mind, we really can't, we can't change the situation around us. We can't augment it. We can't make it better. We're just living in it. You know, it's kind of like the concept of drawing a bath and inside the water of the bath is all dirty and sandy and muddy. I mean, are you going to take a bath in that? Are you going to clean it out, take out the water and refill it? It's the same thing with your mind. You got to think about this stuff. You know, you can't fill your mind up with water and clean it out. What you can do is you can actually take that negative thought process, be aware of it, work on it, let it go, and then remap it with something else. And it's not all about positivity, rainbows, and unicorns. It's about reality. Letting go of that fear and that negativity that's holding you back. And a lot of times we don't even realize that this is happening. It's just ingrained. And so just taking a step back, and if you're having trouble completing something or moving on in your life, or you're having trouble with self-esteem, or you find yourself in relationships that put you down and make you feel bad, you've got to take a step back and do inventory and figure out, what am I doing to influence this negativity in my life? What am I doing that's adding to the chaos? Or what am I doing that's adding to the stagnation? And it's not all your fault. It's not all about you, but you know what? It starts with you. And you got to be your best ally. You got to be the person that cares about you to do what's right for you. You can look around to you about everybody else and say, well, do you have my best at heart or do you care about me and da-da-da-da-da. That's great. And you hope that the people around you that love you, that you love, care about you. But if you don't care about you and you don't love you, then what do you have? And so I ask you to analyze that right now and really think about that. And starting a journal and writing down some of your thoughts and feelings can really be very powerful to opening the mind to who you are. I hope that this show has helped you to think about taking that next step, doing what you need to do, reinventing yourself. And what I'd like to say is just, you know, being able to see that you are powerful and begin to powering up yourself and claiming your positive power to reinvent yourself today. By the way, for more information on Steve, go to steveolsher.com, Steve, O-L-S-H-E-R.com, and you can find information on him. And don't forget to also check out my YouTube channel for some of the latest videos on relationships, overcoming adversity, and letting go of regret. Stay tuned because the Live Your True Life Perspectives with me, your host, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. I'll be back this time in three shakes.